All right, you can begin now if you want to. We're on extended play, right?
Yeah.
All right, our Labor Day conference for 2006. Our subject this time is on the Family Abbey. And this is James Stivers, your teacher and moderator. I was watching a television program the other night. It was called, the Seven Ways Scientists Think the World Could Come to an End. And I fell asleep after the second one. But the first two, I think the one of them had something to do with black holes, we getting sucked into a black hole. I think another one was had something to do with solar radiation, I think is what it was, killing everybody. The thing that I found interesting about the program was is they had done a quick interview of a number of people as to what they would do if they knew that the world was coming to an end, if the coming to the end of the world was imminent. And every one of them said they would get together with their families. That's what all the people said. They would get with their families. And I found that to be quite interesting. Because it seems to be, does it not, that the idea of family is a universal desire, a universal need of the human species. And when we are faced with a crisis, we want to get together with our families. Okay, so I thought that that was suggestive of the importance of our study on the Family Abbey. Because what we're trying to do, what we're trying to achieve with the idea of a family abbey is to make the family more than what it is and currently in our society. We're trying to make the family more fulfilling, more encompassing than it was in previous recent generations. The idea of abbeys, if you read my book, and I might as well go ahead and give this to you now, pass around a few copies of this. This is the printed edition of my online book called The Family Abbey. If you want this material, it will be found on the Family Abbey's website. But the Family Abbey book starts off about a discussion of an interesting social organization that was found in the early Middle Ages among the Celtics, the Celtic peoples, the Celtic Church, and that is the idea of the abbey. Now, there's a lot of course, misassociation of what people think of when we use the word abbey. Because the first thing that people think of is a monastery. That's why I like to use the word family abbey, even though the abbeys originally were not monasteries. They were really originally family abbeys, as it was practiced among the Celts. And then, of course, later on, it was taken over by the Roman Catholic Church, the idea of the abbeys, and they turned them into monasteries. And so basically what an abbey was during the early Middle Ages, it was when a Christian family or clan or a tribal group or a village dedicated all or a part of their estate to a Christian mission. And that's what became an abbey. It was something that was separated from the rest of the society. The society in those ages being oftentimes pagan in orientation, the Christian missionaries would come, and then what would often happen is the chieftain or the local king would give them a parcel of land for them to build their chapel and to build their village. And then eventually what would happen through the success of the Christian mission, the family abbey would eventually absorb the rest of the population, and the rest of the population would become identified with the abbey. Not that they would necessarily live within the walls or the precincts of the abbey, but that locality became identified with the abbey. Oftentimes, what would happen is the chieftain, lord, or prince, or king would donate the land instead of giving them money. And this will be important in understanding how we can work the abbey today, is understanding that the way these Christian people would work is that the land was dedicated to the Christian work, and then whatever income was derived from that land, that was not taxable, and it was set apart for the mission, what the mission was to achieve. So instead of making donations to a church like we would today, people just giving their tithes or what have you, the chieftain, the king would give to the Christian families there, would give them a parcel of land, and then they would sustain themselves from that, and it would not be taxed by the king or by the local chieftain, and then they would use those resources for the benefit and for the work of the Christian mission. So as you look at this outline that I've had here, the historical context of the abbey, it has a long and honorable history. And as I said, it began as a family abbey, and really the word abbey is suggestive of that. Because if you look up the word abbey, it comes from the Hebrew word, which means from the word Abba, the Aramaic Abba. Abba means father. And so the abbey would be the place of the father. And at the place of the father, you would think you would find what? What would you find with the father? You would find safety, wouldn't you? Think of the prodigal son returning to his father, to his Abba. He would find sustenance. He would find comfort and support. He would find instruction and guidance. He would find protection, the security, and a lot of other things that would be associated with the father, with the Abba, is what you would find at the abbey. And that is what the abbeys became. They became places of sanctuary. They also became places of education, of learning. They became places where people could rebuild their lives. People that had gone out like the prodigal son and had murdered and had been in armies and wars and had been maybe involved with robbers, or maybe they just got tired of the way the world was being run and they wanted a different place to live where there was peace and where there was order and where there was love. They would go to the abbeys, you see. So the places of the abbeys were the places where people could rebuild their lives spiritually and physically. And then, of course, abbeys also sent out missionaries. Now, the lands that were famous for the abbeys were, of course, before recorded history, were the in the early Dark Ages. We have very few written records from the early Dark Ages, but we have glimpses of the abbeys in what is now Wales. It was Celtic Britain at the time, between the 5th and 10th centuries. And then about the 8th century, Ireland, of course, became the great land of abbeys. And Ireland, because it was insulated from the invading Vikings and other pagans that were invading the islands, and they had been insulated from the Romans, hadn't been touched by the Roman influence, the Irish came up with a Christianity that was different, and it lasted for 1,000 years, and they did a tremendous missionary work in Europe, sending missionaries into Europe. And Thomas Cahill's book, How the Irish Saved Civilization, would be a good introductory book on that subject. So what we have here is estates where either a clan or a part of a clan would receive an estate from the chieftain, or maybe the chieftain himself would turn the whole his whole kingdom into an abbey, and would bring in, of course, the Christian missionaries, and would set up these places for spiritual reasons of service to God. So as you look at the chart, at the outline here, we have why the family abbey was spiritual reasons. We have the service to God. That would be one of the, and another reason would be a service to our fellow man or to a particular group of people. So there were spiritual reasons of service, of Christian service being shown. And then the outlets for these were very often they would build a chapel where they could have services and worship God. Sometimes these chapels were little more than mud huts, and there aren't very many of them that would be still in existence today. The kind of chapels that we see still in existence associated with the abbeys were the ones that were built during the Norman era in the late Middle Ages. They were built out of stone, and so of course they survived. But the early ones haven't survived because they were made out of more simple building materials. Of course, there had been many wars that were fought as well, and destruction that had occurred through the centuries, and so things were lost. So, and to fulfill these spiritual missions, they had places of worship. It was a place of education, as I mentioned earlier, so they would set up schools. They would have people that would copy texts, various books. They would have copyists. Remember back in those days, they didn't have copy machines. They didn't have printing presses. They didn't have computers, of course. So they had to write things out by hand. And that was quite an achievement, for instance, to take the Bible and copy it by hand. So education was very important. They also taught the people, after the spiritual things, they taught the people various trades and crafts and skills to improve the life of the people. Much of our agricultural knowledge that we rely upon today was developed, the selection of seeds, the development of certain varieties of seeds, the preservation of seeds were the work of the abbeys. Various animals, they would develop certain types of varieties of cows and sheep and goats, pigs, and so on. The abbeys developed these because they were places where they were learning how to take care of the people and how to preserve the knowledge that was lost during the Dark Ages. So that leads us into the economic reasons why abbeys would be formed. Because economically, the abbeys were what we would call a collective. A collectivism, the term collectivism became well known during the ages of the last 100 years or so with the socialists and the communists who were trying to come up with a different form of collectivism, different from what they saw around them at the time. That word collectivism, you have capitalism, that is a form of collectivism. That is how people work their economic exchanges. Then the socialists came along and said, we don't want to individuate ownership. We want the ownership to be held by the people rather than by the corporations. And so the workers became the owners of the company or owners of the land, the owners of the means of production. So they became the collective. So therefore you had co-ops that arose in distinction from corporations. Corporations representing the capitalistic form of collectivism. Co-ops, cooperatives, representing the socialistic version of it. Now you might think, well, where do the unions come into all of this? Unions don't own anything. Unions are basically organized labor to protect themselves from the capitalists, you see. So they don't own the factory that they work at. Whereas in co-ops, the workers may own the family, or rather own the factory that they're working at. So there are economic reasons. And the abbey is a form of collectivism because the people are living on a piece of land and they're not claiming exclusive ownership to the land. They are sharing the land that they're working on. They're sharing the means of production. So for economic reasons, some people have found it to be advantageous in the past to have abbeys, because they realize that one person can't work the land to its fullest potential. And so you need a group of people that can work together and as a team can work the land together. We have an example of that right now this weekend, where we have 3,000 strawberry plants to put into the ground. And 3,000 strawberry plants would take one person too long to plant by themselves. The strawberry plants will deteriorate as they're waiting to be put in the ground. So you need to make that a group effort so they can be put quickly into the ground. So that's why you want to have a large group of people. So we have a fair number of people here. This would be a part of an abbey experience, the collective, where we're putting our resources together, in this case, our labor, in order to make production. So anyway, and for economic reasons, we have formed a collective to provide mutual aid in meeting human needs. And there are social reasons why there have been abbeys in the past. For fellowship, human beings are social creatures. We don't want to be alone all the time. We like to share in the daily experiences of our lives. We like to feast. We like to eat with someone and enjoy the food together and the drink together. When we labor, we enjoy being able to talk about our task and have someone around that we can talk to about what we're doing. This helps us elevate the significance of our labor because we can talk about it. In this respect, we image God this way, because when God created the universe, what did he do? He talked, didn't he? He talked. It was a collaboration between the persons of the Godhead in creating the universe. So, as social creatures, we enjoy the company of others to avoid loneliness. And also, abbeys have provided a very interesting social need in the past as well. And that is that people have found abbeys as sanctuaries, a place to escape oppression. Say you have a bad job, a bad employer that you work for. You have a bad living environment. Historically, in ancient times, the Middle Ages, the people would flee their oppressive masters and flee to find sanctuary in the abbeys. So we see abbeys providing this social need of finding wholeness and fulfillment for the human psychological condition. Rather than being cut off in our world today, instead of in the world outside, you are just a number. You are just a punch out or entry in a computer to your various institutions, whether it's a school, whether it's a hospital, and so forth. You find that in society at large, you have been dehumanized. You become an asset or a resource, a human resource, we are called. But in an abbey, that is where you find your full humanity being expressed, in the abbey. And this is the idea of why we would want a family abbey. And of course, when you think of a family abbey, we're thinking of the extended family group. We're looking at enlarging the circle of people that are a part of the abbey. And so we leave open the possibility that people will not be related to each other in the abbey, but a different kind of structure, a different kind of covenant comes into play that makes a person a part of the abbey. All right. So that gets us through our first point here of why the family abbey. Now we'll move on to our second point here on the family abbey and Bible prophecy. Why this is important to our concept of where we fit in the flow of history. I'm going to make use of the reference chart that I have here. Let's see if I can get those passed around. Let me see to it that everybody gets a copy of that one, including myself. Thank you. While you're collecting those papers, I might just reflect a little bit more about this idea of the family abbey and why it is important to me personally, because as I have taken the time through the years, many years ago, I was looking for, you know, I'm the kind of person that likes to pull back the layers until I get down to the bedrock, get down to what, to the nitty-gritty of what life is really all about. And I don't like the superfluity of that's associated with Christianity and associated with life for any source of life. You look at our society today, everything is entertainment. Everything that you do is supposed to be entertainment. You go out on the lake, it's supposed to be entertainment. You get a boat, it's an entertainment. You go to church, it's entertainment. Go to a church function or a social function, it's all entertainment. We're concerned about entertainment. But what do these functions or events really do? What is there worth to what they are doing? We went rafting the other day. For a lot of people, that's just entertainment. But for us, hopefully, it was an opportunity to to challenge ourselves of what it would take to drift on the water, what it would take to go over rapids in the water. It presents us an opportunity to see the beauty of nature and to see the world in a different way that we don't see it before. We're speeding down a river in a car, an automobile, but we are not speeding down a river. You know, we see the world differently as we're floating down the river. So it's the opportunity to experience something. I think it's the experience that is valuable. Like Henry Thoreau, for example, was America's famous person for wanting to experience something. And that's why he wrote about on Walden Pond, and why he went through the experience of pioneering in the wilderness. He wanted the experience of it. He didn't have to live that way, but he wanted to connect with nature, but he was wanting to connect also with the experience that humanity, all of humanity before him, has experienced. And that was the adversity of nature, how to cope with that, and how to psychologically adapt yourself to the conditions of life and to make a better life for yourself. He didn't want to be disconnected from that. And I think this is why, in my mind, the idea of the family, but not the modern family, you know, the modern conjugal family, the suburban family where you are just push-buttoning everything in your household and everything is sanitized and compartmentalized in your life. You're living in an artificial world. We get disconnected from reality, I think. And it's this idea of the abbey, I think, is the spiritual goal of the abbey is to help us to reconnect with God, reconnect with nature, reconnect with people as human beings, and not focusing on the entertainment aspect of it. So as we look at this chart, I'm seeing that I have to give you a little bit of background here And then I'll back up to our outline again. If you look at the chart, you have a strange word. The word Mahuzim. It's an Aramaic word, Mahuzim. The Mahuzim religion. And then the father religion. And then there's a comparison between the two. I discovered about the Mahuzim religion by reading the writings and commentary of Sir Isaac Newton, commentary on the book of Daniel and the book of Revelation. He's the one that first coined this expression, the Mahuzim religion, and he identified it with the person called the Antichrist. So we're going to discuss that a little bit later because we're looking at the significance of this in terms of prophecy. Now, going back to my introductory statements about the little television program and the interview that they did with all the people and how universal we found the family being, let's talk about this idea of the doctrine of design and providential government. So I look upon the family Abbey as not exclusively a Christian thing. The family is a universal concept to the human experience, isn't it? We've all either been a part of a family, or have a family now, or we will be in a family at some point. So this idea of design comes into play in my mind, because the family predates the scriptures, and actually it predates creation, because in my mind, the family is a reflection of the deity. Now, there are some people that will snicker and say, well, this is just Baal religion, because isn't Baal religion just, the god and the goddess? Isn't that? No, it's not the same as Baal religion, because Baal religion had a dualism of the god and goddess, the opposites, the male and the female. Whereas in the Christian religion, or in what I would call the primordial Christian religion, we find the doctrine of the Trinity expressed in the family, and that in the form of the Father and the Son, so that and the Holy Spirit, of course. So then you have the offspring coming into play here, and I think that completes the pattern and takes us out of the realm of the pagan influence and puts us in the realm of the true nature religion, based on natural revelation that was known to the patriarchs of old. If I were an atheist and I didn't believe in God, and I woke up in the morning and I had to live my life, how would I live my life? Well, I would look around at creation. Come on in.